Quick warning before we get into the celebrations. There can be some swear words and adult concepts in these episodes, so make sure there's no kids around and maybe pop on some headphones. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Rights for Women Book Launch Podcast. I'm Pamela Cook, author, podcaster, and writing coach and mentor. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is a story about an orphan child, a lifelong friendship, and an impossible promise, now available at online retailers and through my website at pamelacook.com.au.
And I'm Kel from Rights for Women, the other half. I'm a podcaster and want-to-be author. My business is Listen Up Podcasting, and we make podcasts for a positive world, like this one. You can find me at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or catch me on Facebook or Twitter.
As many of you will know, with the advent of coronavirus and lockdowns, authors with new releases have been unable to promote their books at live events. Here at Rights for Women, we want to help authors celebrate their new releases and help readers discover new books, all of which are available online at retailers and through independent bookstores. We'll be releasing these mini-sode chats with authors regularly throughout the coming months while we're all in isolation, and authors need a place to launch their books.
Please share the love by letting your reading friends know about the podcast and the books on social media, and by reviewing any books you read to help authors get the word out. This is a great time to put some new books on your shelf, virtual and physical, and to share the gift of reading.
I'm Naomi Kelsall, and I'm here to chat with you about my new rural fiction, The Farm at Peppertree Crossing. I'd love to read you a couple of pages to start with. This book can tend to be a little different to a regular rural romance in that it has some darker themes. The page I'm reading from is where the protagonist, Ronnie, is dealing with a panic attack after a lifetime of unfortunate events. Jake reached a hand through the gloom toward her thigh. No, not her thigh. The chips, just the chips. She had to cut this out to refuse the memories and fears. It had been years ago, half a lifetime. Luke turned the TV up and the guys settled further back on the lounge alongside her. So close she could feel their pulses, hear their two rapid heartbeats, smell their sweaty excitement. Darkness fringed her vision. The bowl slipped in her grasp, her toes curled, cramping against the straps of her sandals. Her stomach turned to rock. If she moved, tried to stand, to escape, they would shove her face down on the lounge, bury her screams in the cushions as they turned up the TV. She knew how it went. No, there was no need for this, no reason to let the memories in. Except she could taste the blood in her mouth. She could hear the screams, her screams. Heart racing, she couldn't breathe. The hands came faster, pretending they were reaching for snacks, but reaching for her, threatening to brush her legs, her thighs, closer, closer. Any second now, the touching would start. Her breath sobbed in her throat. Her jaw ached as the first scream clawed for escape. Chips avalanched over the edge of the bowl. Ronnie? Matt stood in front of her, holding out a drink. Though he blocked the TV screen, shut off the glaring images that triggered her brain, she couldn't speak, could only stare at him as she dragged at the air for oxygen that didn't exist. He set the glass on the coffee table with a crack that should have snapped her out of her miasma of terror. It didn't. Nothing could. She was trapped, just like she'd been all those years ago. Nothing had changed. Nothing was better. A kid again. She was unable to protect herself, unable to fight back, unable to speak out. Panic oozed in, as thick as tar, crushing her chest. She knew how to combat it. Breathe and count. But the numbers wouldn't come. Nothing would come except the memories, blinding flashes of light in the dark room, scars from her past, ripping apart her future.
Wow. That's very powerful, Leonie.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very visceral, you know. You've really captured that. I mean, not that I've been through that experience, but the way you write that scene, you know, really...
Oh, fabulous.
Really connects with the reader. And, you know, like I had goosebumps.
Oh, when that's great. Thank you.
So, yeah, well done. That was fantastic. So I'm really curious to talk to you about, you know, your rural fiction writing. And, you know, you mentioned in the intro that you are on the darker side of that.
Yes.
Which I personally love. But we'll get to that. But you are quite a prolific writer and you write across a number of genres. And so I'm really curious about how you got to be sort of here in this situation that you're in. So if you could give us a little rundown of your writing career.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting story. I wrote my first book, well, it's interesting to me at least. I wrote my first book many years ago, back in the days of longhand and no computers.
Okay.
And at that time you had to send off the full copy of your manuscript to the publishers who tended to be in the UK. So it was very expensive and there were only a handful. So did that, got some great feedback, but of course no deal from it. Set everything aside, went on to have a career as a professional counsellor among a number of other unusual jobs, raised my children, and then only got back into writing probably about 2014. I joined Twitter and found there was a huge writing community on Twitter who had access to all these ways of pitching your manuscripts that I had never heard of. I was still, you know, thinking it had to be old school. And basically Twitter is predominantly American, the literary community on there, and you need to have a literary agent to take your books anywhere, and that's quite a process, winning an agent, a lot of heartache in it. I was very fortunate. I got an agent quite quickly based in New York who then pitched my books, and I'd started writing across a number of different genres. I still had my original book, which was the book of my heart, but I'd also tried writing a number of different books. She pitched some. I had some publishing contracts with various publishers there. But then a friend in that writing community was doing it a little bit tough. She's a brilliant writer and her books would get to acquisitions time and time again, and she would rewrite the book as the editors wanted it and still just wouldn't make that final hurdle. So psychologically she was beginning to get a little depressed about the whole process, which actually happens to a lot of writers. And I discovered that independent book publishing was a thing again through Twitter. And I said, well, look, why don't we just write something and chuck it out there? Because then you've also got a book published. It's indie, but, you know, it's a publication credit. So we went on this journey of co-writing books together. And she's really good in seeking out what's currently selling. She writes to the market, whereas I'm terrible. I'll have a little tantrum and go, no, but I want to write this. And pulls me back into line all the time and says, no, you can't write that. If you want it to sell, we're writing this. So we wrote a series together that did extremely well, surprised us, thrilled us. So that was...
what genre was that in, Leonie?
It's okay. I never know quite how to describe this. It's sort of a fantasy, light sci-fi involving shifters of all things.
So okay,
it's you probably couldn't get a lot more different than rural romance.
Yeah, it's massively different to to your current book. Yeah,
it is. It is. But it was so much fun to write that series, and we still have fun with it because we'd each write different characters. So we challenge people who know us as writers to guess which of us were writing which character.
Oh, really?
So, that's great. Yeah, so that was a ball, and we wrote another series together after that as well. And then I've written some others myself, which I've independently published.
Okay. So you're what's known in the biz as a hybrid writer?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Or a finger in every pie.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was having a look at your website and there's a lot of books on there. So was your first book published in 2014 or after that?
My first book was mid in 2018 was the first book with a publisher, and then I did a whole mass of them in 2019, both self-published and with publishers.
Okay. So you're quite a prolific writer then. You know, you must have a pretty good writing schedule, or just be able to sort of just switch on that muse when you like.
I seriously have no schedule, unless you count putting on the laptop first thing in the morning and then sort of sitting there and pretending I'm working but going through every form of social media I can find as an excuse not to write. That'd be my schedule. No, it's just when I do get into it, I can write very fast.
Yeah.
But I spend a lot of time fluffing around the edges and not doing what I should be doing.
I think I can relate to that very much. So I think a lot of listeners would be able to relate to that. So you write your books previous to this one, were they under a different name?
Yes, they're under Lainey Kay. So it's, you know, a play on my initials, basically.
Yeah.
Because I'd hate for somebody who is invested in rural romance to pick up one of my other books, which is Exceedingly Dark, or one of the others, which also run into erotic fiction.
The Farm at Peppertree Creek, which is your current rural romance or rural fiction, is this your first sort of foray into that genre?
It absolutely is. I initially thought I was writing women's fiction, so, you know, there's a lot I don't know. And the publisher said to me, oh, are you really invested in writing rural romance? So I got on to my friend Sandy Docker, who's a well-known women's fiction writer. I went, tell me about it. Am I invested in writing it? Yes, you are. That is what you write.
Yeah, it's all about the terminology, isn't it? And just, you know, where the publishers are pitching it for the market. So,
and that's, yeah, other publishers would call it just rural fiction. And so rural romance is what threw me, because I was one of those people, you'll probably laugh at this, but I denied for a very long time that I read romance. I thought it would make me sound less highbrow to say that I read romance. And I had to grow up a lot before I realised that basically everything I enjoyed reading, right down to Wilbur Smith, had a romantic component to it. And that's what I enjoy. The romance doesn't have to be the sole story, but I do like there to be a romantic component.
Yeah, romantic element.
Yeah.
So how did you come to write this particular book and also then find a publisher for it?
Writing the book was sort of, there was a two strands that went to that. One was that I was, being a country girl, very aware that rural towns are slowly dying. In fact, the tiny town I grew up in had a total enrollment at the school of 11 kids. Mm. Now the population of the whole town is only about 14 people. So, you know, it's basically gone. And so I had the idea, what if I took one of these tiny towns and repopulated it with partners coming into the area for different reasons? And then there could be a whole series of stories that are about different characters within the region with cameos from like the original book.
Yeah.
That was one part of it. The other part was that my teenager Taylor and I spend a lot of time on the family farm, and my dad feeds us up with either something from the local bakery, or he has this special dish that he makes, which is, now, your face is going to go funny because it sounds terrible, but it's crusty bread, bread with butter, then liverwurst paste, then fresh tomatoes, potato chips, salt and pepper. And it sounds
different.
I know it sounds terrible, but it is delicious. It really is. So that's not quite normal for us to head out to the farm and Dad make us a lunch of that. So one day we're driving out to the farm and Taylor's, you know, typical teenage fashions, running through all the things she needs to eat right then. She goes, I want liverwurst. No, I want lamingtons. Oh, wait, that'd be a good idea for a title of a book. I'm like, oh, yeah, liverwurst and lamingtons. Okay, let's do this. So we drove over to a scrub and sort of brainstormed the book together, because we do a lot of brainstorming together. And obviously the finished book is very different than what we brainstormed. The publisher said, liverwurst and lamingtons, how do you feel about changing that title? It's not going to work.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah, I was like, I don't see what's wrong with that. I totally see what's wrong with it now. Liverwurst and lamingtons do still feature in the book though, so I got that by. Yeah. So that was, the two strands that came together to make that book.
Yeah, and so good to be able to brainstorm the plot with your daughter. Is that a regular thing for you guys?
Absolutely. We road trip all the time, and actually we just did our first road trip yesterday where she's got her license, so she was in charge of driving. But prior to that, I'd be driving and just spouting off our ideas, and she has to scribble everything down and argue with me about what's going to work.
Okay. So it's like having an in-house editor.
Absolutely. Yeah. But she's tough. She's tough. She's so hard.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Doesn't pull any punches.
Yeah. So you then, I presume, then went ahead and wrote the story. And, of course, you had a few books under your belt by this stage.
I did,
what was the next part of the procedure for you in terms of, you know, you could have indie published this, I guess, having that experience, but what made you put it out there?
I was sort of leaning towards indie publishing because I'd come to know it quite well, but it's not my favourite way of publishing, but also small publishers, I've got other books with publishers, wasn't really happy with that either. So I thought, while I'm making up my mind, I'll just pitch it. Yep. Alan and Unwin have a thing called Friday Pitch where you send in basically a small excerpt of your book. So I thought, I'll just send that in today while I think some more on it. So I shot it off to them, and within about 4 days I had an email back saying, send us the whole book. And a couple of days after that, send us information about yourself. And then you think, oh, my God, I've got to make myself sound interesting or information about myself. Oh, no, this is terrible. That's harder than writing a book.
Yeah.
Send that off, and within a couple of weeks I had a contract on it.
That's brilliant, because Alan and Unwin published Fleur MacDonald.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, yeah. My editor Annette publishes Fleur.
Okay, Annette Barlow, yeah. So it's fantastic to know that, you know, because I know a lot of people that have pitched to the Friday Pitch and sort of never have heard anything back, and obviously, you know, not everybody is accepted and it all gets to the next stage. So brilliant to know that, you know, as soon as they connected with your story, they were onto it.
Yeah, I kind of thought, you're just pitching and it's going in a slush pile to be never read anymore. But yet again, I was wrong.
Yay, fantastic. Can you tell us about the book itself?
Yes, it's the story of an unexpected inheritance, a traumatic past, and a family whose secrets are kept by the town. 30-year-old Ronnie is the product of a foster system gone sadly awry. She's streetwise, she's prickly, defensive, and above all else, she's hurting as she's struggling to carve out an existence in Sydney. Facing an unexpected pregnancy, about to become homeless and jobless, the only bright spot in her life is her rescued stray cat, Scriptures. However, one letter could change everything. Ronnie discovers she's inherited a farm in South Australia and she plans to sell it and return to Sydney. But then her decision is complicated by an unexpected friendship with her aunt's life partner, the discovery that she must complete tasks before she can inherit, a reluctant attraction to the farm manager, Matt, who inexplicably seems to believe he has a claim to Peppertree Crossing, and the appearance of her mother, slowly unearthing the years of dark secrets hidden within the tiny rural community. Ronnie must somehow survive betrayal, heartbreak, and loss if she is to eventually find joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot going on there. It's great. Lots of secrets and lots of potential conflict, which of course is brilliant for fiction. So this came from the plot that you brainstormed initially with your daughter.
The plot was a very basic version of that, and I tend to write, my characters are almost a caricature of what they should be, so I'll write a very basic storyline and then I have to go back and discover that character and discover what their backstory is, discover the way why they are the way that they are, their psychological reasoning for why they act in the manner they do. So the basic plot will just be that a girl inherits a farm and goes there and meets a handsome farmer and, you know, there's lots of cute farm animals and baking and that kind of stuff. Mm. But then I need the depth and the layers to every character in there must have psychological reasoning behind their actions for me to be able to write them properly.
Yeah. So yeah, putting the flesh on the bones there, aren't you, of that basic idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about Ronnie. She is you know, obviously from the word go, you know, I've been reading the book and she's obviously a really damaged character and she is sort of thrown into this unexpected situation. But can, obviously without spoilers, we don't want to know too much because I think there's a lot in her backstory that's going to be revealed as the story goes on.
Yeah, but
yeah, can you give us a little bit of an insight into her character?
Ronnie has had to become very defensive. She doesn't see herself as hard done by, but she has, by most people's standards, led a hard life. She's been through the foster system, multiple foster homes where she's not been well treated. And since she's become an adult, she's cared for herself. She doesn't rely on anybody and she doesn't want anybody to rely on her. It's, her cat is the only thing that she believes she's prepared to have rely on her. But in reality, she is a kind soul and she does like to help people. She just doesn't like to allow herself to become invested in them. But slowly she has to become emancipated from that point of view and learn to grow emotionally and allow people into her life.
Mm. Yeah, so she has a lot of armour there that has to be sort of peeled
away. Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
And who are some of the characters that she comes into contact with throughout the story?
There's several side characters. Probably my favourite is Tracy, who is her dead aunt Marion's lifelong friend and becomes a little bit of a mother hen figure to her, providing the softness that Ronnie has never known from a female in her life. Ronnie's mother also makes a reappearance, and Ronnie spent her life saying that she doesn't need to know her parents because they chose not to know her. And she then has to deal with the impact of basically admitting to herself that she does have a deep-seated longing to know her parents. And she's got to work out what she's going to do with that longing, whether to give in to it, whether to allow her mother into her life, or whether to keep herself insular and protect herself from emotional harm. There's a lot of the other characters, and there's several humans, obviously. There's a lot of animal characters as well, because Ronnie's unfamiliar with anything to do with rural life. It's all a shock. The isolation to her is astonishing. She finds it vast and dark and quiet and scary to suddenly be out on a farm after living in Sydney all of her life. But slowly she allows first animals to come into her life, and they gradually lead to her opening up to being able to allow human interactions.
That's great. I love that. And of course Scritches is the cat who we meet very early on in the story. It's a great feature, I think, of rural fiction, is the use is animals as companions, but also, as you say, almost, well, definitely a healing mechanism for characters in a lot of situations.
Yeah, it is, and that works in real life as well. Obviously, as a professional counsellor, I deal with that. And if you can form an emotional connection to an animal, you're more likely to be able to form an emotional connection with a human.
Yeah, for sure. So how influential, how helpful has your work in the counselling field been in your writing and in writing this book?
It's valuable from the point of view that it stops me doing that surface thing with characters where I just go, oh, well, she hurts because this happened. I go a lot deeper, not necessarily in the book. It's not, you know, this long dissertation on psychology or anything. It just allows me to know in my head how she's operating, which therefore informs her reactions, which is what you tend to see in the book. So, yeah, it's invaluable from that point of view.
And how different was writing and publishing this book for you from your previous books, you know, out of this genre and maybe, you know, more in the indie sphere?
The experience with Ellen and Unwin has just been fantastic. They are so in touch at all stages of the process, which has been just wonderful. It's a very fast process compared to America, because my other books were published in America. It's, if you get a contract in America, it's sort of a 2-year lead-in time, basically.
Right,
until your book's coming out. Yeah, so the gloss is sort of gone by the time.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, isn't it? Like two years later, after you've signed everything, that you're finally getting to publication. Yeah,
it's kind of crazy. Whereas with Allen and Unwin, it's just, you know, here's this lot of edits next week. Here's this lot of edits. Okay, next week here's your final lot of edits. So it's just, you know, one thing after another, which really suits me because I'm always writing another book at the same time, so I've finished the one that I'm editing, you know, get that signed, sealed and delivered, it's over. So that's been great. It's very different to indie because indie is a lot of time on social media, which should suit me because, you know, there's that whole procrastination thing happening. But it doesn't really because I don't sell myself, so, you know, I'm just sort of lurking all the time and I really don't like that part of indie. I like to just write a book and give it to somebody else and go, here, here's the book. I'm done with that. You know, I love it. See what you think. Do your thing now. So I much prefer traditional publication, at least with Allen and Unwin, not so much with the smaller publishers.
And how about publishing now in COVID times? Has that been sort of a little bit of an anticlimax for you? Are you finding it's not really had much impact? Or
I was massively looking forward to being able to do a book tour because obviously with the others being in America, that wasn't really going to happen. And that was going to be the highlight for me. And I thought I'd be really disappointed with COVID, but I found with all the Zoom and everything that we can do now, it's actually better because nobody knows you're wearing your pajama pants. Well, I must say, I was just telling Pamela a story. I got caught out the other day thinking I was doing a radio interview, even though it had the Zoom screen. So, you know, I hadn't brushed my hair or anything. And then right at the end, the interviewer took photos. So when you see some really weird pictures of me out there, I was so unprepared. But I must say, I really do like this style of, you know, not having to turn up and wonder if anybody's actually going to be at your launch.
Yeah, true.
And, and being physically prepared all the time. This is far easier. Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier that, you know, your intention in sort of one of the intentions was the idea of reviving a small town and creating a fictional town that you populated with characters. Is your intention with this book to then continue on and set more books in the same town or with the same characters?
There's already a second book written set in the Settlers Bridge District, which is basically where the farm at Pepper Tree Crossing is. Trying to think what I've called it because, you know, it's been like 3 minutes since I wrote words. the Wattle Seed Inn will be the second book, which will, big secret, but I'll tell you, be coming out next year with Allen and Unwin.
Oh, exciting. Congratulations. That's brilliant. You. Yeah. So are you continuing on with your other projects in the background, Leonie, as well?
No, I'm not. I'm just writing the Rural Romance because it takes me probably 4 to 5 months to write the book, you know, depending on that social media time again. Now, I've stepped aside from the other genres because it's very easy when you write multiple genres to let parts seep in that don't fit. And for that reason, I also don't read in the genre that I'm writing because it is far too easy to pick up other writers' sort of techniques and quirks. Even if you're not taking a storyline, they might have a habit of writing in very staccato sentences, and I find that I will start to emulate that without meaning to.
It's an osmosis thing. Well, it's been so lovely to chat to you, and just I'm really enjoying reading the book. Where would you recommend people go to find the book, Leonie?
It's in all bookstores. Try and support your local because they're doing it very tough at the moment. It's also in all your department stores, Big W, Kmart, Target, online everywhere. It's in ebook, print and audiobook, so you can get it pretty much anywhere.
Fantastic. Yeah. And where can people find you on social media?
Just if you look up my website, www.leoniekelsall.com. If you just check my website, you'll see all my links to social media there. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for talking to us and good luck with the book. And we look forward to the next instalment.
Thanks for your time, Pamela.
Thank you for listening to The Book Launch and supporting our authors. If you like what you hear, check us out at rightsforwomen.com, where you can find all our regular episodes and our new book launch episodes, and help us help authors by supporting us at Patreon for just a few dollars each month. You can find out more about all of this on our website.
And don't forget to subscribe to Rights for Women wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, can you please give us a quick rating and review so other people can find us and these awesome books that authors are launching in isolation right now?
Happy reading.
This podcast episode was recorded, produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.